Take a network break. We got a batch of virtual donuts fresh from our Easy Bake Oven ready to serve up alongside a bracing dose of this week's tech news. I'm Drew Conry Murray. Greg Farrow is with me, nestled snugly in the Packet Pushers UK headquarters. And we're pleased to welcome a first-time network break sponsor. That's Liquid Technology. Liquid Technology purchases decommissioned IT hardware, provides secure on- and off-site data destruction, as well as fully compliant and green e-waste recycling solutions for your organization. Visit liquidtechnology.net/podcast today for a chance to win a $300 Amazon gift card. That's liquidtechnology.net/podcast, and welcome Liquid Technology to Network Break. This week's show is also sponsored by Interop ITX. It's the only independent conference for technology leaders. It's taking place May 15th through the 19th. You can get a year's worth of objective IT education in just 1 week. Visit interopitx.com and use the promo code PacketPushers for a 20% discount. And for those of you attending Interop, you're invited to a live gathering at the Centrifuge Lounge at the MGM in Las Vegas. You can join Viptela, the Packet Pushers, and your networking peers for a live event with food, drink, and great conversation on Monday, May 15th at 6:30 p.m. Register at viptela.com/centrifuge, and we'll see you there. Greg, welcome to you. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. Actually, we're getting close to Interop, and I know it's almost last minute if you're signing up, but it'd be great to have you there. Not only are we doing the future of networking on the Monday and Tuesday, we are having a party on the Monday night where we can all get together and have a drink. Viptela is sponsoring that. So all down to the crunch. I've had a couple of weeks where I've not been so well, so now I have to work hard in the next 10 days to get my decks finalized and polished and buffed up so that I can see myself in the reflection.
Buff them up. Steroid them. Steroid them out.
Not that sort of buffing, more like polishing.
Oh, polishing. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah. Car metaphors. Car metaphors.
Car, not muscles. All right.
We don't do too many body metaphors around here.
Not really. All right. To the news. Our first story is about Avaya Networks. They announced a couple of new products earlier this week. One is Avaya Pivot and the other is Avaya Arc. Pivot's a software platform for virtualized network functions. They're targeting branch and remote sites. And the idea is that instead of deploying a firewall appliance and a load balancing appliance and a bunch of other things, run them as VMs on this server platform, and then you can orchestrate it all with Arc, which is create service chains among the virtual network functions. Pivot is out. Arc is still forthcoming, but Avaya continuing to push the ball forward, even though they're going through some bankruptcy issues.
Although, I think there's an echo in here. We've seen this before, haven't we?
Have we?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, this is Versa Networks. This is where Viptela's heading. This
sure.
is Cisco's trying to do it on their routers, but, you know, although IWAN's not it, but they're certainly headed in the direction with their DNA architecture, which is still a bit messy because they don't actually want to disrupt their current revenue and start selling software. They don't want to start selling too many firewalls and too many WAN accelerators running on one hardware box when you can stitch people up for four or five of them. So I don't see this as actually innovation or getting out ahead. This is SD-WAN. So there's SD-WAN where you use it to manage paths, and then there's cloud-based SD-WAN and there's software-operated SD-WAN. But the extension for SD-WAN is obviously to get everything on the box in the branch. So remember last week we talked about Xeris moving over to
Riverbed.
Riverbed, right? So now you're talking about Wi-Fi being in the Riverbed appliance. You know, you need a Wi-Fi controller, but having a Wi-Fi controller back in head office means when the branch network goes down. So why not have your SD-WAN appliance have a distributed wireless controller so the branch is self-contained? And what about a WAN accelerator running on your SD-WAN appliance? What about a firewall? What about, you know, Riverbed's got all of those. And then a monitoring system. So there's plenty of horsepower inside of an x86, so you certainly can do these. And in fact, there's whole startups dedicated to just running NFV platforms like this. So Versa Networks, for example, has dedicated its SD-WAN-ness to service providers, and it's really only targeting service providers and managed service providers because it's based on BGP, so therefore it must be very attractive to them because service providers only like BGP. Innovation hasn't happened in service providers for 30 years, not about to start today. So this is very much, I think, a customer-driven. You know, we have lots of telephones in the branch. Everybody's looking around at all the other, you know, CloudGenix, Viptela, Telari, VeloCloud, you know, all those companies and going, we need better WAN, so Avaya needs to move into that space. And I suspect that that's where it comes from.
I think so. And it's interesting you mentioned there are multiple paths to sort of owning the branch. One is through SD-WAN, where you can do this path connection, but also start to throw a firewall on there and do some load balancing and start to take over those. And even routing, a lot of SD-WAN players are saying, not explicitly, but you know, pretty soon you'll be able to get rid of that router and just run this SD-WAN appliance and do multiple things with it. And then there are companies like Meraki, which are doing the same thing. They started off wireless, but then they started adding switches and security appliances. And now they're also talking about SD-WAN and essentially owning the entire branch access and connectivity.
What Meraki is doing is a very simplified form of SD-WAN. It's not what I would call true or
full-fledged, yeah.
Yeah, you want the multi-path, multi-capability, full, you know, multi-architecture, WAN optimized. I don't think Meraki is ever going to do that. Their product is very much designed not to undercut Cisco's core business, number one. So the big strategic factor there,
sure.
That's key, right? You don't want to suddenly see, why would I buy iWAN where I could get Meraki for one third the price? So it'll always be dumber and stupider and less capable simply because of that, unless Meraki can get out from under the Cisco, start to take control of Cisco's business in the SMB space. And that's possible. Although I don't think Chuck is the sort of CEO who's actually willing to take that sort of risk and make that sort of move. We've seen no signs of that. You do, I think this SD-WAN whole thing that we've seen, you know, and we've been talking way too much about SD-WAN in lots and lots of ways. But the idea is that the branch is probably going to be internet connected. There won't be a private WAN. We've already talked about the death of private WAN. And it's all going to be about public WAN or internet, if you want to call it that. And now the trick is, if everything's connected to the internet, that changes your services model inside the branch. What about, you know, how do I guarantee that my hosts are secure, those remote desktops are secure? And I think there's an angle here around mobile device management. What happens to laptops as they move from branch to branch? What happens with remote working? At the end of the day, SD-WAN and remote device management starts to look different, I think.
It's interesting to see all of this development starting to happen around the branch. It's, you know, it's a sort of this little backwater, but now there's a lot of investment and activity at capturing that branch spend because there's a lot to do there.
Yeah, I think the innovation cycle, this isn't an innovation, by the way. This is just purely organic change. As other technologies transform or adapt slightly, that you're going to see a change. And keep in mind, too, there was a good article this week over at Juniper with Michael Bouchon, who's basically pointing out that SD-WAN is not good business for vendors. It's actually destructive, in the sense that it actually drives down the total market size. So it's not a profitable business for the incumbent vendors to chase after, but ultimately they're obviously going to be forced into it because the startups can move into that space and destruct that old market. So that's not like he's got a choice, right?
I would like to read that article because one of the major incumbents that doesn't have an SD-WAN play at this point is Juniper. So they may be just throwing eggs at a market they're not in.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find that for you and get that into the show notes. You know, you've got to understand that for the incumbent vendors who've been producing WAN routers for 20 years, they're not racing into SD-WAN because most customers aren't actually changing anything. And they don't want to see their revenue disappear down a hole. They also don't want to see it go to startups. So they're sort of sitting on the edge going, how do I make the market grow? And the answer is this. You take your SD-WAN appliance and you start stealing revenue from other businesses like wireless and WAN accelerators and firewall functionality at the branch and content inspection and monitoring plays, and then what you do is you add a cloud on top of it, and now it becomes a cloud enabled, and you've hit all the buzzwords, and maybe there's even extra revenue. There's revenue growth for your business in there.
Buzzword bingo.
That's kind of how I see the SD-WAN shaping out in the next 10 years.
Well, we were talking about Avaya, and quickly a note, we're going to do a lot of discussion about financial earnings season later in the show, but just since we're talking about Avaya, they put out their most recent financial results. The preliminary earnings for the second quarter 2017, they weren't very good. They're expecting revenues of around $800 million, give or take a few million, and that's an 11% decline over last year. Note that these results are just preliminary. They're going to do full audited results in May, and I'm guessing that they're doing a preliminary announcement just to kind of soften the blow when the official numbers come out.
Yeah, well, when companies go into bankruptcy, of course, there's a slowdown, not unsurprisingly.
Not unsurprisingly at all.
You know, everybody goes, oh, maybe I should put my business on hold. You know, maybe I'll wait a few months to see what happens. And of course, in America, Chapter 11 bankruptcy is basically like, we're struggling. We can go in there, we sort ourselves out and get out. America is one of the few countries that actually has this technical bankruptcy. Most other countries just go straight into, you're either working or you're not, and out you go. And we've seen several abuses of the Chapter 11 process over the years where companies try to go in and do some hanky finance or private venture capital and stuff like that. So who knows? Maybe there's a whole bunch of things going on. Only time will tell. There's no evidence of that here. We know that Avaya was saddled with some billions of dollars of debt back in the 2008, you know, just before the financial crash, when it was bought out by a private venture capitalist and then spun back out with a vast amount of debt, much to the profit of the private venture VC.
That's how they roll.
And now it's stuck with, you know, it just can't generate enough revenue to pay the debt, which has become due this year. So you go into Chapter 11 and you basically go to your creditors and say, well, if you want your money back,
you're going to get pennies on the dollar. Yeah.
You can have pennies in the dollar or you can
have nothing.
Let's cut a deal. Let's work it out. And sometimes that deal is throw away bits of the business and try and cash them out and give the creditors some money. And then you try and run the rest of the business. Of course, Avaya's got a very good IP telephony business, very much in the call centers, very much in the, you know, if you've got telephones all over the branches and you've got customers who have this old idea of not using mobile phones and having phones on desks, then maybe getting into SD-WAN, which actually doesn't cost a whole lot. You know, building a router these days is not rocket science like it used to be. And if you've got a captive customer base, as Cisco has proven pretty solidly over the last 10 years, you can capture some quite fine revenue out of that.
That's right. And just as a final note, aside from being in bankruptcy, there's also a $100 million offer on the table from Extreme to pick up Avaya's networking business. And that's also still moving forward, a little bit more uncertainty that may be holding back purchases and revenue. So waiting for all that to shake out later this summer.
Yep. Well, Extreme's definitely going to get Brocade, I would say. And so the question is whether they get Avaya too. Maybe the Chapter 11 will or won't. You know, these things are always a bit different because they're actually, the Chapter 11 is court driven. So.
Well, apparently it is a bidding process. Extreme put the first bid on the table. There's an open period where their folks can come up and make a bid. And Extreme has set the bid floor at $100 million. If someone else shows up with a higher bid, then there's an auction process, et cetera, et cetera. That's why we need to wait this out. But I think there's a deadline coming up in May to see if anybody else is rolling in. So we'll see what happens.
As I said, it's kind of like a court process. You go to a bankruptcy court. And so there's rules and regulations around what you can and can't do. You lose a lot of your flexibility to operate your business. So hard for Avaya to, in a time of innovation, I can't imagine how they got this out through the court to actually start saying we've got new products. So I think this is going to be a fair ways away because they have to come out of Chapter 11 before they can spend money on bringing this out. So we'll see. An announcement doesn't necessarily prove products are shipping. So let's hope that they do get the Chapter 11 wrapped up soon.
All right, moving on. Cisco has announced support for TSN. That's the time-sensitive network, a set of IEEE standards to enable precise time synchronization on Ethernet networks. And this is essential for manufacturing because you want to coordinate machines and industrial processes. They're adding that support to their 4,000 series of industrial Ethernet switches that target factories, oil and gas refineries, and those kinds of harsh industrial environments.
Now, this is interesting because this time-sensitive networking market has basically been around for quite some time, and Cisco hasn't been in this market because it hasn't been in industrial environments, leaving that to specialist companies around the world.
Like Siemens and the like.
Yeah, that's right. And also Ericsson, to some extent, was into this technology because it's used a lot in telephone networks to have very time-precise stuff. This is sort of a hark back, actually, to an era 10, 20 years ago when you want to send signals across the network and they must happen at certain timed intervals. Mostly, we just don't write applications that way anymore. So the idea that industrial networks are using infrastructure to solve their problems instead of software is kind of a little odd to me. But hey, what do I know? Maybe there's a market for it. You know, Cisco's got all the bucks and all the smart brains, I imagine, and they've paid for them. So they would probably know that there's a market for this. So this is all around this concept of PTP or high resolution time-sensitive Ethernet networking. It's been around for 10 years or so going through the IEEE. So all Cisco's done is taken the IEEE standards. It's got some silicon, whether it's developed its own silicon or used off-the-shelf silicon that implements this specific form of Ethernet, then adapted them, manufactured them to operate in harsh environments, and away we go. So nothing too innovative here. This is pretty much Cisco's trying to cover up the gaps in the networking portfolio, and especially as IoT. So this will be related to the Jasper purchase. They want to be able to say, we've got Jasper, we've got a cloud platform where you can have IoT edge devices. Now we can give you the network right the way from the IoT dingle, you know, your Raspberry Pi wrapped up in a special box. Then there's a special network that Cisco will sell you, and then they'll have the routers and the firewalls and the Wi-Fis and the blah, blah, blahs, all the things to connect you up to the Jasper platform for an IoT play.
Yeah, I mean, as if enterprise purchasing is slowing in the Ethernet market and Cisco has some more vigorous competition, then the industrial sector seems like a smart space to grow into.
Yeah, well, I think it's not just industrial, but industrial IoT specifically.
Yes, IoT is very much part of that, yeah.
Yeah, so we've seen people talk about in a factory today, they have like 20 sensors per machine or 50 sensors per machine, but they're now talking about 1,000 sensors per machine or 2,000 sensors per square meter to monitor everything. So today where they have one vibration sensor on the machine, they're actually going to put vibration sensors on every component in the machine. And then you can feed that into your IoT platform and start to extrapolate how much wear, you know, is the machine due for maintenance? Is the machine break up? Oh, you know, just because there's an oscillation over here doesn't necessarily mean it's this part or that part that's broken. That's the sort of thing we're talking about.
We've set up a very nice segue for the next part of that Cisco announcement. They also are talking about the Connected Asset Manager for IoT Intelligence. This is a new cloud service. It aggregates data from IoT and connected devices for analytics and reporting, presumably for just the kind of conditions you're talking about.
And this blog post is worth just filled with so much hyperbole and, you know, digital transformation, innovation, hype cycle, just gosh almighty. What can I write here because I've got nothing to say?
It is so frustrating to know that someone spent some time writing a blog that tells you almost nothing at all. It really drives me crazy.
So you agree? It's not just me.
I 100% agree. 1,000%.
Like, let me just give you the first sentence. I've always admired creative minds who have the insight to change the game based on data, intuition, and strong conviction. What?
What are we talking about here?
What are we on? You know, it's kind of like, God bless. But, you know, that's just not the way to start our product announcement or a strategic play. God, that's just amazing. But anyway, so this is, again, as a Jasper. Jasper's done some upgrades to their core thing, and you can now build dashboards and process lineups around industrial technologies. So that's how I see it out. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I see it. I haven't really got time to dive in because the blog post chased me away.
I just had
mental shutdown. This is the time of creative minds who can reimagine manufacturing to take advantage of the new solutions to get ahead.
The effort required to extract any useful information. Yeah, it's really hard to feel like it was worth it. In any case, we'll have the link there if you want to go see and be dismayed by a lot of useless
blather. You can enjoy that au revoir.
That's right. A particular odor. All right. Welcome, Liquid Technologies, to the Network Break. I hope you are not regretting your decision to sponsor this show based on that last conversation. So do you have decommissioned IT equipment sitting around in your data center office? A lot of us do. If you're planning an upgrade, a cloud migration, or a relocation, Liquid Technology can help. They'll de-rack, pack, and purchase your excess technology hardware. They can increase your budget by giving you money back for your excess IT equipment. They'll also ensure the end-of-life IT equipment is safe. That's a real issue. People shipping out systems for destruction with hard drives and such on it that have lots of sensitive data that's still there for someone to access. They can provide on- or off-site audible data destruction services so you know that the sensitive information has actually been destroyed. And whether your operations are in Tulsa or Tokyo, Liquid Technology has expert knowledge in local regulations to deliver a compliant global solution to your company. Liquid Technology is also an EPA-recognized dual-certified green recycler. So don't let your assets depreciate in powered-down racks or in storage rooms. Get that space back and maximize the return of your excess technology. Visit liquidtechnology.net/podcast today. You can have a chance to win a $300 Amazon gift card. Go to liquidtechnology.net/podcast. And thanks, Liquid Technology, for being a sponsor.
Yeah. I've used those companies like that. I haven't used Liquid Technology because I haven't been in the field for a couple of years, but we have used those and they've been quite successful. So do give it a go. It'd be interesting to see. If you go through it, send me a message. I'd love to hear how your experience was.
Data disposition can be a tricky thing, so definitely worth checking out. And yeah, don't let those assets just sit there. All right, Oracle, we had talked about them a couple weeks ago because they're making a lot of rah-rah, sis-boom-bah noise about their cloud. Now Oracle CEO Mark Hurd is back in the news, banging his chest about his company, saying, quote, the fastest growing cloud company at scale.
So great. Really?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
This is the Oracle that makes databases and charges people based on CPUs, even the ones that don't run their software. So pretty good, right? Did you get a laugh out of this?
I did get a laugh, yes. They've never shied away from pounding the chest.
Yes, never shied away from bravado, bluster, and generally being claiming that they're the biggest and bestest that's ever happened and then hiding behind. But the fact is that Oracle is shrinking and they've decided that actually being in the public cloud is where they want to be because a lot of their customers are defecting to SaaS offerings from a range of competitors. Now, considering that the cloud market is sort of pretty big, there was a tweet that came out this week that said the top three people investing in cloud was Amazon at $3.6 billion, Google at $2.1 and Azure at $2 billion just in this year alone. The guess is that Oracle's spending about $1 billion on cloud, arguably. You can calculate the numbers any way you look, but Oracle's really not at scale. It's very much coming from zero. Questioning whether then, you know, they can achieve the sort of scale that AWS, Google, and Azure has, I don't think anybody takes that too seriously within the next 5 years. My guess would be is that Oracle wants to bluster hard. They want to go out to their customers and say, we've totally got a cloud strategy, because they know they've got those people locked in for another decade, those people who have bought their products, and they're stuck there with a foot nailed to the floor on these critical business applications from Oracle that they've got. And they're saying, yeah, no, we've totally got it. We've absolutely, don't worry about AWS. We're going to lay them flat. because otherwise they might go. So you go out there and you go, don't worry, Mr. Customer, we have our plan. And it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be everything. We're going to make it great. And yeah, I think he's preaching to the Oracle faithful, and nobody else is really listening.
Well, I guess if you've got your faithful, you got to preach to them and tell them what they want to hear.
Well, that's what Cisco does. You know, if you're more into the networking, that's certainly what Cisco's going out and telling its customers, goes out there and says, you know, don't change your routers. Now, don't change away from your Nexus 7000 or your Cat 4500. Nothing's changing. Just stick with it and blah, blah, blah. And then over here, of course, SDN and SD-WAN and, you know, blah, blah, blah is changing everything. So I'm not sure that we know that that's a tried and true method.
The Register is saying that HPE is shutting down its open SDN product line. They're citing an internal HPE memo that they got a hold of. That memo reads in part, HPE will no longer offer a native telco service provider SDN solution. The memo is advising employees who are working on proof of concepts to wind them down and direct inquiries to third-party partners.
Yeah, so this is an open daylight story, actually. So this open SDN line, if you actually look into it, was a version of open daylight and a tool orchestration system built around Open Daylight by ContextStream, which was acquired by HP back in 2015 to bolster their Open Daylight efforts. So effectively, what they're walking away from is saying that Open Daylight for service providers is not something that we're doing anymore. We're going to shut down that piece of the business and move to partners. Now, I think that this is perfectly predictable, and not because the SDN market is starting to settle out around ACI as NSX, as Craig Matsumoto says over at Light Reading. I think we've just come from the ONOS Open Networking Summit in Silicon Valley, and it's clear that the telcos are lining up around Cord, ONOS, OpNFV, and other open source projects that aren't just about the SDN controller. They're about the operating system on the device or the operating system that goes onto a metro device. So you're seeing open optical start to creep in. You're talking about OpenStack to do the whole thing. So they're talking about turnkey solutions, and just selling a networking product isn't relevant. And this is what I think I've been talking about more generally in terms of enterprises. You won't buy the networking product separately from your hyperconverged platform. And the carriers have been very clear. They want to support open source initiatives where Open Daylight is just one component of an overall OpenStack, Open Daylight monitoring metrics thing. Right? That makes sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And frankly, what it means is HPE recognized that the carriers and the telcos don't really need them because they've got all of these efforts going on in these various open bodies where they can get proof of concepts, they can get designs that are being ratified and allow the telcos and the carriers to build them out themselves. So why would they need HPE at all?
Well, I think the carriers are being very careful here not to get locked into platforms like Oracle or Cisco's ACI yes. or NSX, where every time you buy another box, you pay a license fee. I think the carriers are being very smart and playing it very clever in that you're talking about tens of billions of dollars worth of spend here over a 20-year cycle.
Absolutely.
And they want to be able to grow their businesses. And as they sell more product, they want the profits to grow with them, right? So they don't want to be giving away money to Cisco, Ericsson, Nokia every time they turn around to buy an extra box. They want to be in control of some part of that. And open source gives them, you know, they can spend a fraction of that sort of pricing that they used to spend now and get leverage over their traditional suppliers. And these open source projects are getting a lot of support from Verizon and AT&T and a wide range of carriers, and they're still years away, right? You know, we talked last week about OpenStack is dying. Everybody's pointing and saying it's not good. But this is where OpenStack is still gestating and still moving forward. And most of the projects related to OpenStack continue to grow and flourish. So,
yeah, it's not also a ding against Open Daylight, which was undergirding HPE solution, because you'll find Open Daylight in things like Cord and ONOS and these other open source packages that are coming out of these open source consortiums. So it's not about Open Daylight. It's about the carriers, I think, saying we're going to control our own destiny. We're going to limit the number of partners that we're getting involved with. We're going to have more control over the kinds of gear that we're buying, the equipment partners we're working with. We're going to spread that around and not be locked in.
Exactly. And take advantage of open source where it makes sense to do so. So this idea of having just one product boast around Open Daylight doesn't make sense when what they're really saying is we need something that's a data center operating system, and that'll be OpenStack and Open Daylight and telemetry and ONOS and blah, 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 all the different things associated with it. And that's the way, and it's going to be optical, and it's going to be. And so I think it makes sense. And it's a shame because ContextStream was actually a very successful SDN product, and the team was quite good. And hopefully they'll all land on their feet somewhere.
Yeah, I hope so. Also, I guess from HPE's perspective, it seems like they're realizing here's where we need to cut. Because we're going forward in different directions, let's just do it. We're moving on and not going to let it linger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it makes sense. And the new HP certainly seems to have backed off from networking more generally. You know, we saw them partner with Arista in the data center, which makes sense, I think. The H33 assets have been sold off to China, leaving them with the pro curve for the campus and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, Aruba is taking on the campus and the Wi-Fi. And the WAN stuff is not, you know, I'm not too sure how much traction HPE got with the WAN stuff outside of Asia. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. But I think HP's made a sort of a walk back from networking and is waiting to see how it settles out before it comes back in. Because it also gave up on OpenSwitch, the open source operating system that it initiated. And that's now, I think Dell's picked that up and is now pushing money into that.
All right, last week we mentioned a lawsuit between Apple and Qualcomm over patent licensing. This week, Bloomberg's reporting that Apple is going to withhold licensing payments to iPhone contract manufacturers, which is how Qualcomm gets its patent revenue until the lawsuit is settled. This move required Qualcomm to restate its financial forecast for the next quarter by approximately $500 million.
This is what happens when you play high-stakes poker with your customers.
Oh, my goodness.
If there's one thing that Apple's known for, it's like not taking it nicely when you don't play politely with them. Like, they expect a fair deal, a hard-fought but fair deal, and they'll treat you right the other way. I don't think anybody's ever seen Apple sort of take this behavior before. And wow. And I think there's also, I remember reading different court cases saying that Qualcomm refused to pay Apple for something as well a while back. They needed to pay Apple a certain amount of money for something, and they refused to pay it and held it on the books. So I imagine they've provoked something here. And so Apple's been known to do stuff for personal issues, just like the Cisco versus Arista type case. So I get the hint that this has become like, you've done us, you know.
It's personal now.
It's yeah, you've poked a stick and here's a gun. Yeah, your call. Yeah,
that's right. Your move.
Your move, yeah.
All right, a quick moment to tell you about our other sponsor for today. That's Interop ITX, where tech pros go to get objective full-stack education. Interop ITX is taking place May 15th through the 19th at the MGM in Las Vegas, and you can join Greg Farrow and Ethan Banks and me for the Future Networking Summit. It's a two-day session. We're going to take a deep dive into next-generation developments in the WAN and the data center. Greg, you're actually working on your slide deck right now. What do you got in store for us?
I'm going to be talking about the future of networking. So a lot of the ideas that we talk about or the themes that I come here, I'm going to have them into a presentation deck to try and turn them into a couple of hours of long of logical progression. I'm struggling. I must admit, it's a lot of work. It's much harder than you think, but it's basically a narrative around how commoditization and disaggregation and how what I think the future of the software-defined WAN looks like, not just at a technology level, that's important, but about how the business is going to impact the way that technology moves forward. I covered some of that just now. That's some of the thinking that's come out of from putting these decks together. I'm going to be talking. Ethan's going to be talking. We're going to have some guests in to talk about other issues just so that you don't get bored listening to us hour in or hour out, because we respect you far more than we do ourselves. And it's always been good fun. So we've always enjoyed it. And then, of course, we've got the Viptela on the Monday evening. Viptela's sponsoring an event where everybody who's welcome, we just ask that you register at viptela.com/centrifuge so we know who's coming for numbers. And we also want to filter out, you know, obviously people who aren't in Viptela's best interest because they're paying for the booze. But come along and you can spend time with Ethan and myself, and Drew and Robin will be there. The whole team will be there. Come along and say hi. We'd love to see you if you're at Interop, and also say hi to the Viptela people too.
That's right. So join us at Interop ITX this coming May. You can use the promo code PacketPushers when you register to get a 20% discount. We want to see you in Vegas, so go to interopitx.com and reserve your spot today. All right, it is earnings season. As I mentioned earlier, we've got highlights from a bunch of companies, so buckle up.
Thank goodness for that, because there was bugger all news this week.
It was a little bit thin this week, but we got plenty of numbers to talk about. Our first candidate is Mellanox.
Mellanox has had a bad quarter. They're down 17% this morning after they had a big miss on InfiniBand. Now, InfiniBand revenue is a substantial part, the largest part of Mellanox's sales. Could be a little bit wrong when the number's just there, but InfiniBand revenue was down 14.3% in the quarter, basically because, and I quote, "We had no large HPC deals in Q1. Now, a great thing about high-performance compute business, of course, is that when you're buying 20,000, 30,000 nodes, you need an awful lot of NICs and ports. So you miss one deal, you might miss your entire quarter's numbers. On the bright side for Mellanox, Ethernet continues to grow. It's up 17%. But while the share market wasn't too happy about the fact that the HPC market doesn't seem to be moving, they said we're expecting sales to come forward, but there was really no commitments that they had future sales coming down the pipeline. And it may be that high-performance compute customers are actually moving into a hold position, and that might affect Mellanox going forward.
All right. Intel also reported Q1 revenue. They pulled in $14.8 billion. That's 8% up year over year. The company called this a record quarter, and their CEO is crowing about the, quote, continued demand for high-performance computing, which will only increase with the explosion of data.
Yeah, so I think Intel is doing pretty well, considering we've also seen them shut down a few business units this week. Last week or the week before, we've seen them close out the conference.
And not business units, but a couple of initiatives. Yeah, their deal with Rackspace and their developer forum.
And sort of moved away from OpenStack and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I think Intel's looking into the future. They've always had a very good business model around smelling where the odor is coming from and making sure they turn towards it. So
yeah, their revenue went up across five of their six business units. The only business unit where it dropped was in security. So yeah, Intel's firing on mostly all their cylinders.
I wonder if that means the McAfee is now off the books.
Could be.
Because that company is now separated from Intel and, you know, off on its own. So maybe that's where the down 1% comes from, is as McAfee's revenue switches off.
F5, they also had their financial results in for this quarter.
Yeah, they had a bad day too. They're down 7 or 8%, about $12 a share, because they don't have any future growth coming. And then nobody's convinced that they've got any, despite what the CEO said. Basically, they made a big deal in the call about the number of customers with obsolete equipment, which by their definition is anything greater than 5 years old, which in enterprise IT would mean just getting bedded in. But F5 hopes that they can get into customers and upsell them to the new hardware platform that they released last year. They were very successful in upselling customers last year. That's why they got a lot of growth and their share price shot up. But now they're paying for the other side, where the people who are actually looking to the cloud, enterprises basically are not buying. And the speculation, of course, amongst everybody is that the public cloud is slowing down future plans. So if you've got obsolete equipment, maybe you're not going to upgrade. You've already been so. This naturally leads to the CEO saying, oh, but look at our public cloud. We had a big public cloud. Look at the magic. Look at the smoke. Look at the pretty unicorn. But on the whole, they did pretty well. They still up 6.9% for product revenue at $240 million. And services revenue is up $270 million. Interesting to note that F5 is now selling more services revenue. That includes cloud security subscriptions and maintenance and everything. They're now selling more services than products.
That's been a recurring theme, I think, with a lot of companies we talk about here.
Yeah, yeah. It's not about the products anymore. It's about the after-sales service, the after-sales sell.
And Juniper also weighed in with the results, and they got a big pop in their share price.
Yeah, it wasn't too long ago we were saying Juniper's having a bad day, and now they've managed to turn it around. So product revenue is up 10% to $800 million or so, but services revenue only $400 million, but still up 13%. What I found interesting in the announcement was that Juniper, for the first time, has actually broken out their revenue into three categories. Cloud is $330 million. And what's interesting about that is that that's much bigger than the enterprise at $320 million. The fact that they see cloud as a whole separate business unit to the enterprise, and that it's bigger than the enterprise, tells you something about where Juniper's results come from. And I've sort of had a bit of a moment here. I've been wondering why Juniper's sort of doubling down on stable product and focusing on that, the Junos. You know, we recently did a tech field day where they talked about the features and the telemetry systems and how they can scale up the telemetry. And I was thinking, like, well, if I'm an enterprise user, this has got no wow for me. But if I'm a cloud provider, guess what I'm focused on?
That's right. Telemetry is very important.
I want that device to be rock solid. I want my telemetry to come out of there like a rocket. I want good, competent features.
You want programmability. You want APIs. You want to be able to extract data from it quite easily. And you also want a solid operating system. And that, I agree with at that Tech Field Day presentation, that's where Juniper's focus was, the programmability and the information you can extract from their systems.
Yeah. Cloud is bigger than your enterprise. Guess what your feature focus is?
There it is.
There it is, and that's why. Now, cloud and enterprise today are basically the same. Enterprise is only up 1%, cloud's up 25%, and then, of course, there's some telecom business. So, of course, the bad story is that security sales are down 10% year on year. They believe that the decline, they said it in the announcements, that the decline of older products is the cause. And, of course, that's the older NetScreen products are dying away very rapidly, basically because they've got a very bad rep following a security breach. But from what I hear in the market, customers are also exiting the SRX firewalls because the product isn't very good. There's lots of reliability problems and pain associated with them, and customers are switching over to Fortinet or Palo Alto, perhaps. So I think one of the big themes around Juniper was that they're continuing to focus on reducing costs. So that means less salespeople, that means less engineers, and it also means don't expect anything new or innovative from Juniper. I think they've switched into execution mode. They're going to protect their revenue, protect their profit margins, and wait to see what happens in the market before they make any more moves.
All right. Well, we'll follow them up with next quarter and see how that's going. Amazon, they also announced quarterly earnings. They had a very strong quarter for online retail and in the cloud. Their revenue topped $3.66 billion for the cloud, which is up 43% over last year. Its operating income of $890 million was almost 50% higher than last year. That's pretty good. Although there's a story in a register that notes that for the last 7 quarters, the growth in AWS's operating income has actually been lower than the previous year. So even though numbers are going up, the growth is not the same. So that may be a sign that they're starting to be a little flattening out of this curve.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, is AWS is slowing down, or customers for AWS are slowing down. Or maybe there's a little price. When you're looking at revenue, it could be that prices are dropping. But you can take it any way you like. At the end of the day, AWS's revenues for the quarter were $3.66 billion, which is pretty much quite a bit bigger than everybody else. But when you consider how much money they're throwing down the pipe.
A lot of money.
Yeah, $4 billion a year. So, you know, just in hardware assets, not including people and everything. I think some people will be heartened by this, like the enterprise vendors will be pleased that AWS is finally, its growth rate is slowing down, and maybe they've got a couple of more quarters of oxygen before AWS mows them down.
I guess, yeah.
I was studying an IDC report this week. I only get the one page, you know, we don't have the money to afford an IDC full subscription, but the IDC says $32 billion will be spent on cloud IT infrastructure. That is, the companies behind clouds will spend $30 billion on cloud IT. So I think that's interesting in that Amazon is going to be like one third of that. And that's starting to show. So it'd be interesting to see how this works out. Good to see AWS is slowing down. And some of our legacy vendors will get a chance maybe to play.
You pulled out some results from Radware. What's happening over at Radware?
Yeah, you don't hear much about Radware. I thought, since we're going to have an all financial results all the time this week. Radware did quite well. Radware has taken their application delivery controller or load balancer and turned it into a DDoS protection box. This is a very popular way of growing your application development controller or load balancer business. Take the deep inspection capability, slap some security engine on top of it and call it DDoS protection. Pretty obvious. Everybody's done it. All the application acceleration vendors from Riverbed right the way through to F5. This is actually working out for them. So they actually got good $50 million worth of revenue, but what they particularly got is $128 million in deferred revenue on $50 million worth of sales. So that this is orders that are sold but not yet delivered. So this is a combination of software subscriptions or people who've subscribed to DDoS services that Radware provides, and they've got orders that will fill out over the future. So when you sign up for a cloud subscription, the way to measure it or to measure the depth of that subscription revenue is to look at deferred revenue. So clearly, DDoS protection is a good business to be in. Lots of forward recurring orders that helps you know exactly where your business is going. But specifically, they also called out their integration with Cisco's Firepower. So we saw about a month or two ago, ACI and the Cisco Firepower team calling, saying that they could use the Radware DDoS protection agents inside of the platform, the Cisco platforms. That's apparently been getting them good sales. You can't ever get away from Cisco when you're in the networking game.
No, no, you can't. And Gigamon, they also posted results.
Yeah, they got hammered. They're down 20% this morning.
Ouch.
Basically because their sales just paused. I'm going to go with a bit of a gut feel here. I think that at some point, Gigamon was having a lot of sales of their products into Russia. There was talk consistently in the financial reports that they were getting strong sales into the Russian Federation. And I can't help but wonder, in the changing political environment, whether Gigamon might have been frozen out of some of that business going forward, or maybe that business is saturated. Now the Russians are starting to look to their home technology industry to make a lot of that sort of stuff. So they did, however, talk all about their AWS visibility tools. So they've adapted their product to work inside of AWS, and they had a major success there. It's just Gigamon's got very soft forward projections, so there's no expectation of growth. So the share price is now reducing quite a bit because there's not going to be any more growth there. And the share market always looks forward, doesn't look backwards.
No, it doesn't. And then Fortinet, sounds like they met expectations. Things are pretty much steady as it goes.
Yeah, so just in case you think that security's in trouble, that's not true. But what we are not seeing here is over-expectations being met. So Fortinet was steady as it goes. It projected its revenue. It's still up 20% year on year, so $340 million for the quarter. Slightly over, which is enough to give the stock market no reason to decrease. But the financial, like, you know, remember for the last year or two, we've seen this rapid ramp up of security companies. That stopped. So the growth that they were getting is now slowing down. Maybe a bit like cloud. We've hit the first phase of, oh, we've got to go and buy new security stuff, and now we're back to just business as usual, sort of stasis type stuff. So Fortinet, the share market seems to think that they're right. Well, the share price of Fortinet is about where it needs to be. So no up, but no down too. So maybe no down is as good as it gets today.
So in all these financial results, if we read these tea leaves, are there any big themes that you're picking out here?
So I think what investors are looking at is cloud, right?
Yeah,
they're very big on this deferred revenue. You know, how much of this is subscriptions revenues? How much of this is, you know, how's the shift going? There's still the usual focuses on profit margins, like Juniper's being pressured to get its offer profit margin up from 61, 62% up towards 64, 65%. And it just says, no, we can't do that. That's not going to happen. Pricing is too competitive. And if you're selling to cloud companies, you can expect a very tight profit margin because they're just going to go, well, we'll do it ourselves. Do you know?
They have that option, yes.
They have that option and have done that with the other networking vendors like Cisco, for example. And I think the recurring theme all the way through this was they're all talking about their public cloud initiatives to help capture revenue going forward. And if you don't succeed in doing that, then the share market punishes you quite a bit. This has impacts. This has results when that sort of thing happens.
It's interesting to see because you mentioned all of the spending that the Amazons and Azures and Googles are doing to build out that cloud. And if some of that money is going to go back to folks like Juniper who are now deciding to call out a cloud business. And then as Gigamon, you mentioned saying, okay, look, we need to get into AWS and other clouds and do visibility there because we're slowing down on the, you know, the premises network. So yeah, cloud is the story.
Well, you know, $4 billion of revenue in the AWS cloud, that's still a drop in the bucket of the overall IT spend that we have.
Sure.
But if you're a company making products in that space, you've got to be going where the customers are going, even if you just follow them for a while and then wait to see if it blows up. Like we saw HPE get out of Open Daylight. They had to follow that trend until it played out.
Right, exactly.
And if they weren't there and it took off, they would be too far behind the curve, a bit like Cisco with software-defined WAN in a lot of ways. SD-WAN's taken off without Cisco because Cisco refused to admit that that was going to be a thing. And they sort of dabbled and Meraki kind of sliding in through the back door. But IWAN hasn't been a huge success. Customers have got it, but I don't think it's been what Cisco would like to see. So I expect, you know, that's the sort of thing that happens if you don't play in everything and then walk forward and walk back. You know, so as things die, you kill them off and move on.
Yeah, but cloud seems here to stay. Folks need to be there.
Yeah, I can't see public cloud dying. There's too much benefit for certain type of business models there.
All right, well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Network Break. Greg, where can folks get more from you?
You can find me on my microblogging at etherealmind.com where I'm spitting out little nuggets of joy and epithets of deep thought from time to time, perhaps. I'm on Twitter as @etherealmind and, of course, blogging more heavily over at packetpushers.net.
And I'm Drew Connery Murray. I'm on Twitter at @drew_cm and I blog at packetpushers.net. Thanks to our sponsors, Interop ITX, Viptela having a party at Interop, and Liquid Technology. And thank you for joining us for this episode of Network Break. If you enjoy the show, give us a like on Facebook, give us a recommendation on iTunes, or share it with your friends. And please check out our newsletters, Human Infrastructure Magazine and Link Propagation. Plus, you can find all kinds of free technical podcasts over at packetpushers.net, including our latest edition, The Full Stack Journey from Scott Lowe. Please go check that out. As always, thanks for listening.